This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
Our view in Azimio is clear. The figures announced by Mr. Chebukati are null and void.
That's Kenyan opposition leader Raila Odinga saying he will challenge the announcement yesterday that he lost the country's presidential election. Details coming up also. In Mali, an affiliate of Al-Qaeda has claimed responsibility for an attack Friday on a military base close to the capital Bamako. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Kenyan opposition leader today, Raila Odinga, said he'll challenge the results of the close presidential election after Deputy President William Ruto was declared the winner. Odinga's announcement brings new uncertainty to a country where last Tuesday's vote was widely considered as its most peaceful. Wafala Chebukati, the chairman of the Independent Election and Boundaries Commission, yesterday announced the results, but four of the seven commissioners have said they disagreed with the process he used and would not support his announcement. Odinga harshly criticized Chebukati today in Nairobi. He called the declaration that William Ruto had won the election a travesty.
Our view in Azimio is clear. The figures announced by Mr. Chebukati are null and void. I repeat, the figures announced by Mr. Chebukati are null and void and must be quashed by a court of law. In our view, there is neither a legally and validly declared winner nor a president-elect.
Now, East Africa's most stable democracy faces weeks of disputes and the possibility that the Supreme Court will order a fresh election. Religious and other leaders have pleaded for calm in a country with a history of deadly post-election violence. Odinga joined them in urging peace.
I do not want to fully address our strategies going forward, but suffice it to note that we will be pursuing all constitutional and legal options available to us. We will do so because we regard the many flaws in the elections and the wrongs committed by the IBC as fatal to the process and the outcome announced by Mr. Chebukati. I want to commend our supporters for remaining calm and keeping the peace, and urge them to continue to do so. Let no one take the law into their own hands.
As you heard earlier, a day after Deputy President William Ruto was declared the winner of the narrow presidential election in Kenya over longtime opposition figure Raila Odinga, Odinga today made his first public statement. I talked about Odinga's position and statement with VOA TV 54 managing editor Vincent Macori in Nairobi, who is closely monitoring the situation.
Exactly. That was highly anticipated because, you know, yesterday, Mr. Odinga boycotted the ceremony or the event at the Tallying Center in Nairobi's Bomas of Kenya. And it was very confusing for some earlier on, but later it was established that he did not agree with the results that were being declared by the Electoral Commission chairman. So today, Mr. Odinga came out very openly and clearly and made a statement that many people had been waiting to hear, saying he, without reservation, rejects those results because there were errors made and there's some opaqueness about the whole process that makes them believe that they have been denied the victory.
Did he make any efforts to actually reach out for Ruto, Mr. Odinga?
You know, we don't know at all if they've spoken at all after that announcement. But it's clear that at this point, I don't know if they would want to have any conversation because Mr. Ruto accepted the results, gave an acceptance speech, and already started behaving like a president-elect. So as far as he's concerned, he's duly elected. And he said everybody expected that result. He believes that every Kenyan expected him to win. And so he does not see any reason for anybody to dispute. In fact, he called this a sideshow.
And Vincent, talking about the sideshow, four of Kenya's seven election commissioners are also standing by their decision of disavowing the result of the August 9th presidential election, saying the final tallying process had been opaque. Could you talk a little about that? I mean, they are adding fuel to the fire here?
Oh, yes. It was very significant that they spoke just moments before Mr. Odinga spoke. Mr. Odinga was to have a press conference at 2 p.m. It was delayed a bit, and we got to see first the commissioners address the press, and then later Mr. Odinga spoke at a different venue. But they said they stand by their position. They say the process was opaque, and that the Electoral Commission Chairman, Mr. Chebukati, had not involved them in the final tally, which they're supposed to discuss together and definitely reach an agreement that those votes are legitimate and that that's how they should be. So they say because they were excluded from this, Mr. Chebukati made a unilateral decision and an pronouncement, and they characterized this as unconstitutional.
And as if we needed more drama, Vincent, in this election process in Kenya, a Kenyan election official who went missing shortly after last Tuesday's federal election has been found dead. Do you have any idea what's going on here?
This is very strange. And for someone like me who has covered a number of this election, if someone is familiar with a movie called Groundhog Day, it just almost looks like that. It's like you are living the same day over and over. This is what we witnessed in the last election, where an electoral commission official disappeared just 2 days to the election and was found murdered. 5 years later, that issue has never even been resolved. And then here comes another election, a returning officer, a very critical official in the transmission of the elections. This is a person actually who is in charge of a polling center and who actually has to physically travel to the National Tallying Center to submit a very important form called 34B to the Electoral Commission headquarters. He disappears just before he could personally bring those details, those results. And then after a few days, it is discovered that he's dead somewhere way far from where he was working. It's another disturbing turn of events happening at the most critical time. And so people are perturbed by this and trying to understand why and in whose benefit, who was behind it, and why would they want to kill this person? So that is ongoing. The officials say they are doing their investigation. But Kenyans are not lost on the fact that the last election official, and who was very high ranking within the Electoral Commission, disappeared and found dead. And that case has never been resolved 5 years later. So you wonder, what hope is there that this particular case will be resolved anytime soon?
That was VOA TV 54 Managing Editor Vincent Macquarie. He talked to me from Nairobi. Political analysts in Kenya say the public is beginning to accept more diversified leadership after last week's election saw a small but a record high number of women winning office. Victoria Amunga reports from Nairobi, Kenya.
Kenya is a male-dominated society, and the overwhelming majority of political offices are still held by men. But in the August 9th elections, a record high total of 22 women won seats in the National Assembly and the Senate. Women also won 7 of the 47 county governor seats, up from 3 in 2017 elections. Political analysts say the results show Kenyans are becoming more comfortable with the idea of female leaders. Mark Bichache is a Kenyan political analyst.
I think Kenya has gotten to the point where it has accepted that women can lead. And the fact that it's not even a big discussion, it's not a shock in the country, then the country has definitely agreed that a woman can lead.
Vimal Shah is the chairman of Kenya Daima, a group promoting peace and unity whose name means forever Kenyan in Swahili. He was impressed that nationwide nearly 2,000 women ran for political office.
Women have always sought opportunity to show what they can especially do in leadership, but now we're seeing it coming through and they've been supported. And I think impressive 1962 women candidates in this election. That was really brilliant.
In another notable development, voters in Kenya's Bungoma County elected an albino man, Martin Wanyonyi, to the National Assembly. It's the first time a person with albinism has won a competitive election to parliament. Previously, Isaac Mwaura was appointed to a seat representing special interest groups. Analyst Bina Maseno says previously cultural and social barriers would have kept people like Wanyonyi out of office.
So to see candidates with disability being elected at the ballot is definitely impressive and a step towards the right direction.
The August election was the third under a constitution established in 2010. Political analysts believe that continued sensitization of the public will see Kenyans elect more diverse leaders in the future. Victoria Amunga for VOA News, Nairobi.
In Mali, an affiliate of Al-Qaeda has claimed responsibility for an attack Friday on a military base close to the capital, Bamako. The group, known by its acronym JNIM, said the raid on the installation was in response for a military government's use of mercenaries from Russia's Wagner Group. A statement by the group said, quote, "If you have the right to hire mercenaries to kill defenseless, innocent people, then we have the right to destroy you and target you." Reuters says the raid on the Kati base, 10 miles outside the capital, used two car bombs that killed at least one soldier and wounded six. Seven attackers were killed and eight arrested. JNIM said a bomb at the installation's gate and another inside allowed fighters to enter. JNIM also took credit for an attack on Thursday in five towns in central and southern Mali, which authorities say killed one soldier and wounded 15. You're listening to Africa News Tonight, live on the Voice of America. I'm Yehiz Wahib in Washington. Please note we have moved our programs from voanews.com to voaafrica.com. There, you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. Find us on voaafrica.com. The South African government faces criticism at home for sending its Minister of Defense to Moscow to a Russian state-sponsored international security conference. The invitation to the event came from Russia's Defense Minister, General Sergei Shoigu, one of the architects of the Kremlin's war in Ukraine. South Africa's official attendance at the meeting in Moscow comes about a week after Pretoria hosted U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken. Darren Taylor has more.
South Africa's Defense Minister Thandi Modise previously came under fire for attending a cocktail party at the Russian embassy in Pretoria the day the Kremlin invaded Ukraine back in February. Now she's in Russia as a speaker at the 10th Moscow Conference on International Security. According to her department, Modise also will meet with her Russian counterpart.
This is consistent with South Africa's position, which is not taking sides with ongoing conflict and an independent foreign policy.
Professor David Monya, a political scientist at the University of Johannesburg's Africa Center, says Modise's attendance at the Moscow event isn't an endorsement of Russian aggression in Ukraine.
There's also a golden opportunity in conference of this nature in which South Africa would speak for itself and the continent on issues core to its interests and the continent's, as well as try to mediate. And therefore, I think South Africa is making it quite clear. It's an independent state. It will take any conference that tries to bring peace and security in the world.
But civil society organizations are questioning how Russia, which has invaded a sovereign country and killed and displaced thousands of civilians, is in a position to advocate for peace and security anywhere. One critic, Greg Mills, the director of the Brenthurst Foundation, an African Development Research Group, calls the trip shocking and evidence of moral ambivalence and hypocrisy. The Center for Human Rights in Pretoria says the Russian trip is ill-advised and won't win South Africa many friends. The government says war is wrong, but it also says it's non-aligned when it comes to the conflict in Eastern Europe. Modise's statement says her government signed a number of military-related bilateral agreements with Russia to significant benefit of both countries. Monier says the same can be said with regard to South Africa's relations with some of Moscow's enemies.
There's been a number of military exercises and talk of American military in South Africa. It's ongoing. Last week, it was the other way around. Those who are leaning toward the East, China, Russia, would have said South Africa is part of Washington establishment.
Nevertheless, ask Pretoria's critics, should Modise's pre-conference statement have described Russia as one of the key players on peace and security on the African continent? They point out that Moscow's role on the military front in Africa recently has been to send what it calls private security forces from the Wagner Group to fight proxy wars in several nations. Monier says Modise's trip is an opportunity for her to raise some of the concerns about Russia's activities in Africa.
For instance, allegation of mercenaries in Central Africa or in Libya, where lots and lots of Russian armaments are being poured on the African continent. And I think we have to be as fair as we are with Westerners, where we disagree with them in terms of intervention in Libya in 2011 and other areas where we are not happy with their military bases on the African continent. We should equally raise those kind of issues with Russia in platforms like this in which the minister is attending.
South Africa's attendance of the Moscow event has been condemned in Ukraine. Its Parliamentary Foreign Relations Committee says South Africa has a reputation as a country fighting against racism. There is no need to ruin this reputation by such visits. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
The Biden administration says its new African policy is based on establishing equality, promoting open societies and democracy, and working towards pandemic recovery and climate change adaptation. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Washington.
Equality at last. That is what U.S. President Joe Biden's reframed Africa strategy pledges to the fastest-growing continent. Secretary of State Antony Blinken summed it up thusly during his whirlwind trip to Africa last week.
What we seek most of all is a true partnership between the United States and Africa. We don't want an imbalanced or transactional relationship. And our commitment to a stronger partnership with Africa is not about trying to outdo anyone else.
Except, Africa watchers say, two countries loom large. China, whose Belt and Road Infrastructure Initiative has crossed the continent, and Russia, whose foreign minister also took a recent tour of the continent to remind African nations of old ties from the post-liberation era. Krista Mackay is an associate professor of government and African studies at St. Lawrence University. She spoke to VOA on Zoom.
I think the shift in rhetoric is an important one, and also one that is really aimed at countering China's use of the term partnership, you know, economic development partners, that has been well-received across the African continent in terms of being more respectful.
The White House says this will be exemplified later this year at a revamp of 2014's U.S.-Africa summit. At that summit, then-President Barack Obama made a point of not inviting Zimbabwean leader Robert Mugabe, who grew increasingly authoritarian before his death in 2019. And he's not the only African leader to have served for several decades, a challenge to the U.S. policy of pushing democratization. Ebenezer Obadare is a senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations. He spoke to VOA on Zoom.
I think the United States is in a very interesting, you know, juncture here, where if you have to try and at least appear to want to have you know, everybody around the table, even people that, you know, you rather not have around. So I expect there will be, you know, a lot of African leaders there.
And he said there is a real sense that this policy, while materially not too different from previous policies, carries a note of truth and reconciliation.
What I like about it is, so there's a particular language about the United States saying, we think we may have acted dishonorably, it doesn't use that word, but something similar, in the past, we've not always been true to our word, but hey, we want to wipe the slate clean.
So is this a fresh start? In these uncertain times, the U.S. clearly hopes so. Anita Powell, VOA News, Washington.
And Nigerian oil authorities have launched a mobile application for reporting stolen oil revenue. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
The launch of the crude oil theft monitoring application took place last Friday in Abuja during the signing of renewed production contracts between the Nigerian National Petroleum Commission and its oil drilling partners. Authorities said the mobile platform was created for members of host communities in oil-rich regions to enable early reporting of incidents and spur immediate action from relevant security and government authorities. Whistleblowers will also be rewarded. During the launch, the NNPC group head, Mele Kyari, admitted that pipeline vandalism has become difficult to control. In July, Nigerian authorities changed its oil firm from a solely state-run entity to a commercial oil company. Emmanuel Afemia, the founder of Abuja-based energy consultant firm, says addressing oil theft is an important issue the new company must address to improve its earnings.
At this point, NNPC would be able to at least find solutions to the issue of subsidy, to the issue of inefficiency, to the issue of loss every year, because the effect would actually be felt by them. So I'm not sure they would want to continue with the way they've actually been operating the corporation. So this is really a right step in the right direction.
According to the NNPC, Nigeria loses 200,000 barrels of crude oil a day, or about $4 billion in revenue every year. Kyari said so far this year, the country has already lost $1.5 billion due to escalation of pipeline vandalism and oil theft at the Bonny Terminal in Rivers State. But Toyin Akinosho, publisher of the Africa Oil Plus Gas Report, says beyond launching an app, political will is needed to address the problem.
It's very important that the state hydrocarbon company itself is announcing this. You know? But it's not just a question of that tracking. It is actually how you deliver on ensuring that those incidents don't happen again. There has to be the willpower to deliver. That's what I'm interested in.
Nigeria is Africa's biggest oil producer and has been seeking to cash in on rising energy prices as Europe tries to wean itself off Russia's energy supply following the invasion of Ukraine. Authorities have revived decades-old Trans-Saharan pipeline projects from Nigeria to Algeria and also from Nigeria to Morocco. Both projects are targeting European energy markets. But Akinosha says the projects may not be completed until a few years from now.
Whatever it is that we're even building will take a bit of time. You can't construct these pipelines that government's talking about. You can't deliver them in less than 3-4 years.
In January this year, authorities in Nigeria's oil-rich River State began cracking down on illegal refineries locally known as Bullfire. Many operators were arrested. Authorities say the government's oil and gas revenue target this year is now threatened by a production shortfall of 28 million barrels caused by oil theft between January and July. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Ihiyes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Bill Andrade, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.